Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
It's Wednesday on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, which means it's Trends Day, and joining me on the podcast is our co-host from First Down Playbook, former NFL coach Charlie Coyner. Charlie, great to be talking ball with you.
Hey, Keith. Great to be here.
And also Zach Dunn, our content coordinator at USA Football and an analyst himself. Zach, always good to talk ball with you.
Can't wait, Keith.
All right, guys, so we're going to get right into it and take a look at some of the things we're seeing as the season has rolled on. You know, you don't expect maybe to see as many new things, you know, in the season. And we've talked a lot about, you know, some of these different trends, and we will rehash a couple of those that we've looked at before. But I mentioned the Wake Forest offense last week and what they do and how unique it is. And early in the game, I believe it was second play of the game, and I've seen this a few times, kind of in short yardage situations, we ended up with what looked like a zone read, but they were in 11 personnel, and they had a hat for a hat, except for the safety who was coming down away from where they were running the football. And quarterback was going to be opening opposite of him, so his back is to him. What I found really interesting in how these guys did it was that guy was looking over his shoulder. So he obviously saw him creeping down pre-snap, knew there was an extra guy there and he could be a problem. You know, you get that guy skinning off the edge and making a tackle for a loss. But I, you know, they did in typical Wake Forest fashion, walked that mesh point to the line of scrimmage, and he's looking over his shoulder, literally looking for that safety, and as soon as he sees him, he lets it go and kind of just backs into him. And it was like I mentioned it on All 22 Tuesday when we looked at it, it looked like a guy boxing out for a rebound. And Charlie, you made the point, and one of the things you said, Jim McNally's butt block is coming back, because we saw it from the quarterback and we actually saw it from the end there as well. But just an interesting way of how they're handling the short yardage and the numbers in the box.
It is. And, you know, we all want to be, I don't know, for lack of a better term, tough guys with, you know, your offensive line and how you're going to do things. And the key point that I noticed, and we saw it yesterday when we were talking about it on All 22, is that inside it is a very physical football play, meaning that your guard, center, one of, you know, to the right or the left, either way, there's going to be a double team and you're going to have movement at the point of contact. And you got a little bit of messing with the linebacker's reads. It's kind of part zone. It's kind of part dive. You know, your quarterback's not giving you any read. He's scooting up to the line of scrimmage. So there's a lot of different key breakers in there. And then, yeah, what you're just bringing up, I'm going like, you know, where is the weakness of this thing? You think, well, if it's going to take all day to get there, then something's off the edge. It's, you know, they're going to get in there and, you know, clip him on the knee before he gets to the line of scrimmage or whatever. And sure enough, you know, I looked and saw something very familiar that I'd seen Jim McNally teach many a time for a tackle, that where the defensive men have gotten upfield so far, where essentially you just back up into him and block him with your rear end, so to speak. So it, you know, we talked about this last week and I hadn't had a chance to look at it quite as much, but it's one of those things where you go, nah, it shouldn't work, but you know what, it does.
You know, like you said, they actually got both edges with the butt block, one with the quarterback and that tight end who had to back up into it. But again, you know, I want to continue watching what those guys do. They're a top 10 offense in the country and they continue to move the ball on everybody. So they got some big games coming up and we'll see how other teams approach that as the season goes.
Yeah, before we leave that, though, I just want to make a point, because I did go back and watch that game, you know, the highlights of it. And, you know, you hear me on here saying all the time that, you know, how are people going to, you know, defense stop that and stop that? And a lot of times you hear me say, you know, the good teams are going to jump up in man coverage and stop that stuff, you know, outnumber the box and bring pressure and whatever. And the play we're just talking about, second play of the game, was pressure. And they ran the ball with short yards. But if you go back and watch that game, and talking about Wake Forest again, Florida State closed the middle of the field and played man coverage on them most of the night. And Wake Forest made them pay for it. And so goes to what you were just saying about Wake Forest. It's not just the gimmick here or there. They got a quarterback and a receiver if you want to close the middle of the field on that team, you better have somebody that can match up, or they'll make you pay that way too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are doing a great job throwing the ball as well. I know we've mentioned how unique what they're doing in the run game is, but yeah, they've been able to hurt people when they take on that mentality that they're going to pressure it. And really, you know, you look at it, you have to fully develop your team. I mean, if you want to be able to beat all the answers, you have to have things within your toolbox, whether that's personnel, whether that's certain concepts. And we're seeing that from, I think, a very smart Wake Forest staff. All right, guys, so we have talked a lot about the under center offense kind of making a resurgence, and we've seen it around college football, more and more teams going under center to operate. And really, you know, we've seen that in the NFL and some of the hot coaches in the league, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, you know, now Matt LaFleur, like those guys, a lot of play action, a lot of under center play action. And, you know, that's part of what we've seen from the teams going back under center, a lot of outside zone with some play action naked or play action drop back. What we saw from Alabama the other day was really, I loved it. I saw right away, I think I tweeted about it, was those guys utilizing play action from the pistol with the reverse out. And Charlie, you and I, that was, I think, our first connection. You called me, oh man, must have been back around 2013. To talk to me about what we were doing with our reverse out in the pistol and what we were doing. And it was something that, you know, we actually, as we put it together, we were looking for people who were doing it. And it was your buddy, Jerry DiNardo, who was doing that a little bit at Indiana at the time. But the other day we saw, you know, quarterback catch the snap, reverse out from pistol. I think the first time they handed it off could have been, I can't recall it. I think it was a counter. But then the next time, I think it was the next play, reverse out, and they hit a double post. And, you know, as I mentioned to you back then, and we talked about it on All 22 Tuesday, the power of that is really that you're getting some of the effect of what you would get under center with the quarterback turning the back to the defense. Now you get that in the pistol as well.
Yeah, and we talked about this yesterday too. I mean, I don't know how fast your guys did it, but Tua on the run plays that I ended up watching, it was so daggone fast that it's like, I mean, it is spinning. And obviously there's a lot of work that goes into that. There's no question, just the tape doesn't lie from the standpoint of the Tennessee linebacker was, you know, play side, so to speak, was all the way across the ball, or the line of scrimmage, excuse me, by the time he realized that it was actually a play action. And we touched on this a little bit, you know, yesterday too, that, you know, from a standpoint of the play action off of that, you know, there's a lot of mechanics and that ball's got to get up and out and some things like that. But there's no question. I mean, the more, you know, John Shoup used to always say, and I know he got it from somebody else. But the more you can make something look like something else, the better off you're going to be. And that play right there looks exactly like their run play. And it's, I mean, if I'm a linebacker or a quarter safety, I don't know, not probably till he's back there on his hitch getting ready to throw that post behind me, am I going to really understand.
I know, Zach, you really love what the Rams do. And again, the Shanahan type of offense, we see it now, as I mentioned, from LaFleur and all those guys kind of tied together. You know, what do you think of the adaptation of some of this stuff maybe to the pistol?
Yeah, you know, I've talked on here before with the Patriots, how one thing I've always noticed about the Patriots is anytime they run any sort of gap scheme, whether it be duo, power, counter, and even all their play action off of it, they always reverse out. And, the way they do it too is they will reverse out, but, you know, they will show the ball big time. So, you know, the running back will jab step towards the side that they're opening up to. And, you know, so say they're running duo to the right and the quarterback opens to the left, shows the ball. You've got the running back taking a jab step to the left. You know, that's going to hold the linebacker's backside. But also, even on play action, the more you show that ball and, you know, the more you can turn your back to defense and even hide the ball, that makes it tough on linebackers and safeties to get a true read, you know, is this play action or is this run? And, yeah, I mean, I've always been a huge guy that, you know, I love it. I love everything that has to do with reversing out when it comes to run game, aim play action game. I think it makes everything look a lot better. It It hides the ball a lot better. It makes it a lot tougher on the defense. So, yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of it. And, you know, like you said, Keith, you know, I mean, if you're a gun team, you can reverse out. You just got to get to the pistol.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I looked at when we studied this, and Charlie, you could probably relate to it. Like, the question came up, you know, this is spring ball preparation for spring ball. And the question came up, what if we reverse out in this? I think it was, man, it was an assistant coach for me by the name of Tony Testy. He's the head coach now at West Virginia Wesleyan. And he brought that up, and we hadn't seen it before. I mean, there was not, you know, it was not as prolific where you'd see these things on the internet and certainly not on social media. So we're in the office, Charlie, and we're literally in there. You know how when you have something new like this, you're walking through it as coaches in the hallway or in the office or in the meeting room. And it was literally in there figuring it all out. And it was talking about, well, what if we do it in power? What are we going to do in counter? What if it's outside zone? Because we wanted everything to look the same. And we literally had to work out and calibrate all of that before we introduced it to the players. And, you know, it really became back. I remember back to my early wing tee days. It was all about the midline, right? Who has the midline? The quarterback's over the midline this much, that much. And really, we went back to kind of that midline in order to calibrate this the right way. And you see on the film, and we'll put some of these clips and links to these clips on our show notes on blogs.usafootball.com, that the tailback drop steps on this. So when you typically, if you're in pistol, you know, those guys are usually taking steps towards the line of scrimmage or, you know, moving over so they could get downhill right away. And it was all about the timing and tempo of this as well. So it was like creating a little bit longer cell, like Zach mentioned, by that reverse out and by that tailback being patient as well. And, you know, I wouldn't recommend, if you like this kind of stuff, I wouldn't recommend that you implement it right now in season, because there is a lot of timing to it. It is different. But if you are going to be a team who wants to get downhill and do those types of things, get into the play action, but stay in pistol and gun to throw the football, I think this gives you the perfect opportunity to kind of marry all of those worlds. And I had a coach ask me on Twitter the other day, you know, can you still be an RPO team? It was absolutely yes. We would, you know, we coded everything so that by the way we called the play, our players knew if it was the reverse out footwork or if it was the read footwork. So again, a lot of it goes to structuring it as well.
I think you make the great point there, Keith, from a standpoint of like, yeah, here we are in late October. Definitely, you know, that's one of those you put in the folder and come back and get after it in spring ball, because I don't know, I don't follow Alabama week in and week out, but I don't know when they put it in, but that cat that was doing it for them, he's pretty good at doing it. So I don't know, and many of us have that guy.
It has that feel to it, Charlie. We mentioned this on All 22 Tuesday of the old spinner fullback. If you pull out like and able to find some old film on single wing teams that had a spinner fullback, that's really what the quarterback is doing there. You know, I would love to add the orbit motion to it. Like the other teams, you see the Rams do it. You see the Niners do it. Those guys, you see it in the NFL everywhere where you have the receiver coming behind as well. You talk about really giving a wing tee flavor to things, because you got the guy going to the edge, guy going up the middle, quarterback coming out the other way. You've got the perception of the defense that you're attacking all flanks on every single play when you have that great ball handling and faking in it as well. And so it's a little throwback and nod to some of those older offenses, certainly still very effective today, but some of the elements of that really come into play when you start piecing those things together.
Yeah, and as you do it, and Keith, I know you've done this before, any good offensive coordinator has. I mean, walk across, if you want to know how effective it is, walk across the line of scrimmage during practice. Stand over there. Don't get your defense coordinator mad at you, but look at it from that side. Go get the defensive end zone film if you've got it, and take a look at, that's when you'll truly understand the power of what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Charlie. You know, we did exactly that. We talked to our linebackers after we installed that, and they saw it for the first time. And their, you know, exact words were, "Coach, we can't see the ball. We lose the ball." And that's exactly what we wanted to do. So for us, we didn't have, like I said, didn't have all the luxury of access to all the film that there is today. It's crazy that was only shoot, I think we installed that in 10. So that was, you know, 9 years ago, but things have certainly changed and that we see everything right now. And I know, you know, talking about those older types of offense is something that, you know, again, has that single wing feel in the NFL is you're seeing it more and more out of the Ravens and what they're doing with Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, they've, you know, obviously, you know, Greg Roman has done a tremendous job, and talk about coaches working in the off season. That's what they did from the loss in the playoffs last year after they went late on the beach for 1 week, you know, in the draft. They have obviously committed to how they're going to make Lamar Jackson even a bigger threat than what he is. And I think, you know, I look at the Ravens and I've got some of my best friends on that staff. And so I cheer for them, to be perfectly honest. But I look at them and I see the wing T stuff, and I'm going to be really interested, because I think where Greg is going to be challenged and the offensive coaches at Baltimore are going to be challenged is how far can you take that passing game? And we all know that dude will get himself out of trouble with his legs a lot, and that scheme is going to – they're going to help him every way possible. But it's just a matter of, once again, how far can that take you unless you have a passing game that can, you know, be dominant, like we all know, the Bradys and the Breezes and the people like that. So I'm going to be really interested to see that. But the Ravens are always going to play good defense, too, so that's a good football team.
Yeah, I was going to add to that, Charlie. You know, that's a great point you make. You know, I think the first thing that Harbaugh did was, you know, when they went out and got Lamar Jackson, you know, they went out and got Greg Roman, who was also with Harbaugh's brother and San Francisco coach and Colin Kaepernick. So, I mean, they're definitely playing to his strength. But, you know, I think you bring up a great point of, you know, when it comes time for postseason, quarterbacks and passing is, you know, is ultimately what's going to drive an offense in the postseason. I mean, when it comes to postseason time and you're the Ravens, you're going to see New England's defense. You're going to see defenses like, well, obviously not the Seahawks, but you're going to see defenses like that. You know, this last weekend, you saw, I think the Ravens only scored 14 points in offense. I think they got another 14 out of their defenses. So it's like, you know, how far can this take you, and how long can you live like this? I mean, I saw a stat the other day where Jackson has, I think, as many rushing yards as like 8 or 9 teams right now around the league, and I know he does a great job at avoiding the big hits by sliding and getting down and getting out of bounds, but after 16, 17 weeks, I mean, do you really want your quarterback taking as many hits as a tight end or as a running back would take?
No, you don't. I flash back, Keith, and you'll remember this, with the Coach and Coordinator podcast. And once again, John Shoup, I'm bringing his name up again. But, you know, he used to say that when we always wanted to play the Atlanta Falcons late. And the reason we wanted to play the Falcons late when we were at the Bears is because Michael Vick wasn't the same dude if you got him week 12 through 16. Because he pulled that ball down. You know, not many guys out there right now. I know there's a lot of good athletes out there with the ball in their hand, but not many of them are going to put much over on Michael Vick in his prime, right? I mean, that dude could do special things with the ball. But by the time you got to the cold weather, you know, you'd like to get him in Chicago, too, if you get him late. Just the wear and tear. And, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But once again, they back to the original point, they have done an incredible job. And Lamar Jackson is going to get better as a passer just from, you know, the speed of the game slows down for the players. And he's only a second-year guy, too. So hats off to them. I mean, they've done an incredible job right now. At literally 5-2, Keith. I
think unfortunately, at the top of the North, yeah.
Yeah. I figured you would. That's why I asked you. I figured you would know that. But yeah, I mean, hard to be 5-2 in the National Football League. So right now, you're not worried about game 12 through 16. You're just trying to make sure you get to be 6-2.
Well, guys, we talked a lot this season about everything going on with the picks. We're seeing so much of the man defense again is kind of that answer to RPO. Mesh has become something that's almost in everybody's playbook, or some type of, you know, low, shallow crosser, getting across and running as fast as he can with the football as he attacks that opposite flank. We certainly have seen a lot of picks along the way and different variations of that. Some legal because they're throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage. But Charlie, you saw one out of the Florida and South Carolina game and kind of made the point that maybe officials need to keep up with the trends a little bit too.
I think so. When it affects the game like it did that, and you know, this has been really good, you know, for me from the standpoint of not coaching the season out, but actually, you know, talking to you guys each week and trying to do some, you know, some homework on my own and watching what's going on and all this crossing route and rubs. And the last two weeks we've showed where defenses have done a good job with the crossing routes, the picks, the rubs, and dropping people out. Wisconsin did a good job of that 2 weeks ago, and then yesterday when we were doing all 22 Tuesday, we saw the Saints dropped out a couple guys for the crossing routes. And so we've seen all this crossing route, the picks and rubs, and here's what I've noticed is that defenses have started, you know, being physical with receivers, grabbing them and things like that. But what I saw in the South Carolina game against Florida was just a good old-fashioned sprint to the right. We all know it's going to happen. You're going to have the outside receiver set some kind of rub or pick, stick their butt out or whatever, and then break back or cross and make it look like it's not what it really is. But these were just blatant blocks. And so the problem I have with it is, and I get it, being a referee and an official is hard, but I think that they need to do, you know, none of us are coaching right now. I mean, they need to do a little bit of kind of the same thing that we do from a standpoint of keeping up with. I mean, at this point in the season, Mom kind of knows what play's coming on that one. Now, how well they do it and, you know, how flagrant they are with what they try to get done, that still remains to be seen. If they execute it right, I don't think there should be a flag thrown. And that's coming from an offensive coach. You know, defensive coaches always think there should be one. But what happened on Saturday with that game was, I mean, it's cheating. I mean, it should have been flagged, and it changes the game. And so, once again, hard job on the referee's part, you know, what they've got to do. But I think at some point it's important to understand this play here is probably coming.
Yeah, we've seen that play quite a bit. Some that exist in the gray area that probably are really tough to see. I did mention that as I was going through Wake stuff, I saw them run it 100% legal. That guy turned and came right down the line of scrimmage, was not across it, caught the football, got into the end zone, had those guys executing blocks downfield. But again, it was legal because he was behind the line. And I did have a high school team. I talked with a coach this past weekend, and, you know, he was looking for ideas to help his quarterback out, especially in the red zone, and, you know, having trouble seeing things and, you know, progressing through his reads as the spaces got tighter. I said, take the read out of it for him and put in some of these screens. We're getting guys up at, it looks like they're running routes or coming across, and then they're just blocking people and you're throwing the ball actually behind the line. But the point I made to him, Charlie, really goes to exactly what you're talking about. I haven't seen this a ton at the high school level right now. And I said, you need to make the official aware that this is what you're doing. And this is where the guy's catching the ball, to put it in their head that they're seeing it the right way as well, because, you know, the guys on the other side will be talking about that right away, especially if it's the first time they've seen it, and you want to be out ahead of it with the official.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you don't, and you, shame on you, because they'll listen to you. Those guys are looking for, you know, as long as they don't think you're trying to plant things in their head, then they'll listen to you. You know, the hard part about the Florida-South Carolina game is that, yeah, every defensive coach could tell the officials that from the other standpoint. They'd be like, yeah, you're trying to set us up. But I think you're exactly right. That, you know, if you've got any trick plays or anything that's going to be close, then you're going to help yourself out a lot by a coach. That's what you're doing. You're essentially coaching the officials up before the game. So it'll pay dividends.
It's Wednesday, which means the whole cycle starts again tomorrow night, Thursday night football. I did mention before, we're creeping towards that time when we're going to start seeing some of those college teams playing earlier in the week. And we get to the point where we have football 7 days a week. So we're going to be really busy then. But I enjoyed the conversation with you, Zach. Great talking ball. Thank you for all you've added to this. And Charlie, we mentioned it, you know, we're talking about players, using players. And, you know, my high school coach, my freshman coach, always used to say, give me players, not plays. But, you know, you need the plays as well. And you've created one of the best resources on the planet for football plays in First Down Playbook. Tell our listeners about First Down Playbook and how they can see that.
Yeah, Keith, no doubt. I'd always want to have players. But at some point, it always starts with a drawing, and then it gets to the walkthrough and the practice and the film and then all that. But we, you know, at First Down Playbook, what we've got is over 35,000 plays, all drawn by NFL coaches, offense, defense, special teams, and coaching points, the whole bit. The difference is now in this year, 2019, you can now edit these plays. So essentially, it's a big time saver for coaches. So if you're interested in taking a look at it, just go to firstdownplaybook.com, spell out the first, F-I-R-S-T. If you want to see a little bit about what we talk about each week, we've got a blog site too, and that's blog.firstdownplaybook.com.
Zach does some articles for us as well, some analysis articles. Zach, what do you have going up this week?
I got the Blitz from Wisconsin that we talked about last week that's scheduled to go up tomorrow morning called Spike One Rat. And we also have an article from you, Keith, or on the Wake Forest run game mesh between the quarterback and the running back.
Yeah, we'll have all those up. And again, the plays we talk about here on the podcast, we do put links to those videos. So if you need a visual, they are there as well. Check those out at blogs.usafootball.com. And check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, and tackling. I know it's late in the year, but we got some great stuff in there that you can implement now. Very easy to do to make your team better as the late season wears on. There's a lot of things that you can do without heavy contact and even carry those into the offseason. So again, check those out at footballdevelopment.com. Guys, we'll do it again next week. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.